Prince Vasily had once been a very wealthy man whose fortune was reduced by extravagant living. He had two sons, both spendthrifts, and a daughter, Helena. It occurred to the prince that the best way to ease his situation would be to marry this daughter to Pierre. Helena was beautiful and willing. Such a thing as refusing the richest man in Russia was unthinkable. So it was that Pierre was invited to St. Petersburg to be a guest at the Karagin Palace, ostensibly that he might be guided in his new role as the scion of the illustrious Bezukhov family. Pierre, not knowing what else to do, accepted the invitation. The sudden adulation of society and his immense fortune was still a mystery to Pierre. When Prince Vasily vaguely spoke of the responsibilities of his position, Pierre had merely a troubled conviction that this must be so, but what these responsibilities were he could not imagine, as an army of agents looked after his property and everything seemed to be done as it should be. Also, when Prince Vasily announced with affectionate solicitude that the next step should be marriage, Pierre assented, although he could not see why marriage should be the next step. He did not love the beautiful Helena, but he did perceive after a time that he was expected to marry her, for everything seemed to be prearranged for him. Helena's chief interests and ambitions were social. After her marriage to Pierre, she became the high priestess of society, with Pierre conveniently in the background providing the means for her extravagant living and covering with the cloak of respectability her immorality and licentiousness. Disappointed and disillusioned, Pierre sought comfort and redemption in Freemasonry. For a while, the ideals of the order, love, brotherhood, seemed to fill up the void within him, and he did much to improve the lot of the serfs on his vast estates, but he was vaguely conscious through it all that he had not gained from Masonry all that it promised. Deep within him were the doubts and questions that had tortured him for years. What for? What is the use? What is it that is going on in the world? He would ask himself in perplexity several times a day. My wife, he would probe still more, who has never cared for anything but her own body, and is one of the most stupid women in the world, is regarded by people as the acme of wit and refinement, and is the object of their homage. My Masonic brothers swear in blood that they are ready to sacrifice all for their neighbor, but they don't give as much as 1 ruble to the collection for the poor. We all profess the Christian law of forgiveness for our sins and love for one's neighbor, but yesterday we flogged to death a deserter, and the minister of that same law of love and forgiveness, a priest, gave a soldier the cross to kiss before his punishment. Pierre's self-torturing doubts and reflections were sometimes shared with his intimate friend, Prince Andrew Bolkonski. It was difficult to understand the attraction between these two aristocrats, for Andrew, son of one of the great men of Russia, appeared on the surface to be the opposite of Pierre Bezukhov. Coldly intellectual and cynical, Prince Andrew was very handsome, a young man of medium height and with firm, clear-cut features. Everything about him, from his weary, bored expression to his quiet, measured step, offered a most striking contrast to Pierre. And yet, there were moments when that weary, bored expression disappeared from his handsome face, and a strange transformation took place. That was when he spoke of his wife, who bored him to distraction, and of women, of society, and of the emptiness of life. Then every muscle of his thin face would quiver with nervous excitement. His eyes, in which the fire of life always seemed extinguished, would flash with brilliant light. And Pierre, watching his friend, would say, "It seems funny that you should consider yourself incapable and your life a spoiled life. You have everything before you, everything." With the death of his wife at childbirth, Andrew began to draw more and more into himself. To him, life had little to offer now except duty to his son. He began to devote himself entirely to his estates. Occasionally, he emerged from his retirement to take part in matters of great importance to his country, making rare appearances in drawing rooms and setting feminine hearts aflutter. In time, an aura of romance formed itself around him, enhanced by his brilliance and aloofness. So time passed. In 1808, Tsar Alexander went to Erfurt for a first interview with Emperor Napoleon